building a product versus building a business. This is the Early Days Podcast. Hi everybody, welcome to the Early Days Podcast, a show about the hustle, the excitement and doubts, the success and failures, the ups and downs of building a business from scratch. My name is Marin, and with my co-founder Julian, we interview fellow entrepreneurs about their experience of starting businesses. As we're building our own apparel company and documenting our early days, we wanted to go behind the scenes with other entrepreneurs and find out what their early days, weeks, months and years were like. On this episode, we talked to Shane and David from Can to Pan Strain, or C2P Strain. C2P Strain was specifically developed to solve dry paint stains and debris, and is the only solution for a no-mess strain from the paint can directly into the painting pan. While talking to Shane and David, we found out there is a lot of overlap to how they approach business and how we at Dulu do things. Some of the topics we touch on in this conversation are working with a co-founder, what triggered them to jump into entrepreneurship, building a business when balancing a full-time job, product development and manufacturing, collecting feedback early on in the process, and marketing strategies. Make sure you check out their business online on c2pstrain.com. That's C, the number 2, pstrain.com. Or say hi on Facebook by looking for the C2P Strain page. Now, without further ado, enjoy our conversation with Shane and David from Can to Pan Strain.
Yeah, so my name is Shane Smith. I am a mechanical engineer. I live in the Chicago area right now, but I'm originally from Ohio. And Dave and I actually both went to school there at Ohio University, and we got our mechanical engineering degrees. And we both were always interested in entrepreneurship. And, we got together a few times early on, and we met up in college and worked on a few problems together, but it was really after college that we really connected and decided that we wanted to form a company and try something moving forward together.
How did you decide to start working together? Was it something you were exploring beforehand, or did it just happen naturally?
Yeah, so actually, it's kind of funny. So Shane's actually a year older than me. So we didn't have a lot of classes together, but we both had always wanted to be inventors, and we didn't really know that until one instance in college. I don't know if you guys have heard of the seven most prominent engineering problems in the world, but essentially, if you solve one of them, you get $1 million. I forget who pays for it or how that works, but one of them has been solved so far. And Shane and I had a fluid dynamics class together, and he went around to everybody in the engineering center. And he was like, hey, who wants to help me solve this problem? We could win $1 million. And just, obviously there are world-class people working on this all the time.
Mathematicians.
And he is, we're sophomores, we're 19, 20 years old. And he's going around talking to everyone in the lab. And everyone was like, this is stupid. No one's going to ever, be able to solve this.
Right.
But he was so passionate about it, and I always dreamed big. I heard him, and I was probably the last person he came to. I don't even know if he liked me too much in college. But he came to me, and he was like, you want to try this? And I told him, yeah, this sounds amazing. And we actually spent some time on it, and we met with some professors about it. But that was kind of the first, time I met somebody else with the same visions, because you think about a lot of the high-performing habits that entrepreneurs have. And honestly, intelligence is not necessarily one of them. A lot of it's your work ethic and what kind of habits you form and what your visions are and how you execute on those visions. So that was something that we definitely had aligned, and I noticed an instant connection. And after college, so that was kind of one thing that happened during college. After college, we ended up working in the same town. It was a small town called Dayton, Ohio. And we started working there. And I remember seeing something on social media about him working there. So I gave him a call. We met up after college, and we had a few drinks at the bar and started kind of spitballing some fun ideas. And he asked me what I wanted to do. What was my ultimate goal? And I told him I wanted to start an invention company. And he had actually already started an invention company with a couple guys from our college. So it just ended up working out where we just, our visions aligned once again, and we were working in the same town, and we were able to spend a lot of time in our free time working on inventions and entrepreneurship.
That's very interesting. And how many years already have you been working together?
About 4 years now. We started in 2014. I think it was the summer of 2014 when we first got together. So it's been about 4 years.
Right, right. And when you started this venture, I'm curious, because it was similar to our journey here with Julian. We were both at the same time kind of looking to do something entrepreneurial, but we were still employed full time. And for you, like meeting in college and starting this after college, I wonder, what was your intention? Did you want to go immediately to the entrepreneurial path, or do you want to start by joining already an organization and working from there?
Well, yeah. So we both had full-time jobs at the time where we really met and tried to start this thing. And, you know, we pretty much knew that you need a lot of capital to start a business, and you need a lot of time. And we didn't want to quit our full-time jobs because, you know, we wanted to try and put in the work and the effort and make it happen alongside of, you know, having a regular engineering job. So that's kind of what we decided, is that we were going to, you know, keep our jobs and do that during the day. And then in the evenings, we would, you know, get together at one of our places. We'd switch off, you know, one night we'd be at Dave's, one night we'd be at mine. And we would start spitballing ideas, and we would go to work, you know, for 8 hours in the morning. And then we'd go back to one of our places for another, you know, 5 or 6 hours at night. And, you know, it's still that way. We're still just putting in crazy hours. We still do both work full time. We both have engineering jobs, and it's a lot of hours, but we really do love what we're doing, and it's fun. This is what we do for fun. So coming home and you know, getting right started on entrepreneurship and you know, selling and reaching out to other people, that's what we like. So it hardly feels like work.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Especially when you do it for yourself. I'm curious, what was the trigger that inspired you to start? Because that's, I think, a moment where a lot of people have a lot of ideas, but most of them stop before they actually start executing. What was for you the factor that triggered you to start?
Well, so I have always loved, you know, tech products and inventing, you know, just all kinds of crazy things. I mean, even when I was a little kid, I would, you know, just build, you know, stupid inventions, but they were fun. And that's what I always wanted to be, was an inventor. So throughout college, I came up with, you know, some ideas that I thought were fun and, you know, techy, and they might, you know, present well, if I showed them to people. And I did pretty well. I got some good prototypes out, but you know, nobody was super interested in it, and I couldn't figure out why. And you know, one thing that I realized is that, you know, doing this as a one-man show was very difficult. And so after I graduated, I decided, you know, I want to build a team out of this. I want to have partners who are just as dedicated and can help motivate me, and who have different talents than me. And, you know, we can support each other in the goals that we share. So that's really kind of what kicked it off, is that I said, you know what, this is something that would be more successful, and we'd be able to have a better shot at being entrepreneurs if we have a team. So I started kind of reaching out to people that I thought might be interested, and eventually we formed a pretty good team.
Yes. So for me, it was actually completely kind of a different experience. Shane and I, we met up and we decided to start these ventures. But for me, the point where I really started believing in what we were doing was about 2 years ago when we started C2P Strain. And a lot of the struggles we had early revolved around, we worked on tech products, kind of like Shane was saying, but these were products that we wouldn't really even use, and we didn't even know if there was a market for, right. And we didn't have any industry knowledge. And so from that perspective, it was really difficult to have a vision for those products. Now, where it kind of flipped was, we had spent 2 years working on all these products and we kept getting stuck at the same place. We would make these fantastic prototypes, understand all the technical challenges, but we couldn't get any further than that. We couldn't get to the point of mass production. We couldn't get to the point of marketing or sales or getting industry feedback.
Right.
So that was kind of what drove working on a simple product like C2P Strain. We decided that let's work on a product we can self-fund. Let's work on a product that is everyday use and easy to get feedback. And our third partner, Shane Springer, who's our third partner, worked in the paint industry for about 7 years. So now we have somebody in the industry that can push knowledge that we didn't have before and have connections that we didn't have before. So now when we finish these months and months and months of prototyping and getting feedback, now we have him who's saying, hey, I talked to, you know, 50 Sherwin store owners that I am connected with, and this is the feedback that I got. And now that we have actually are producing this product and making sales, he has been a huge asset to us,
to the team,
to the team, because of his connections and his industry knowledge. So we completely shaped our way of thinking, because at the beginning we wanted to go straight to the top, kind of like Tony Montana and Scarface. You know, we wanted to go straight to the top right away, be these kingpins. And we realized, you know, you got to start somewhere and learn the process first and build building blocks, slow building blocks, small steps. You can't do one huge step. And I think that was, we had kind of maybe a little bit too high expectations. It's always good to think too big and fail, though. You never want to succeed easily.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. I think I heard Nathan Cotney the other day. You guys were talking on the podcast. And one thing that really jumped out at me was when he said, you know, something about launching the product with no audience. And that was one thing that we, you know, I don't think, it's not that we didn't grasp it off the bat, but we didn't make that the focus, you know, having an audience for the product. And that really was the thing that made the difference.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Are you, when you're talking, there's so many similarities to how you guys approached your product development and launch and how we did it as well. It's really, really interesting, because we also have basically searched and found a third partner, not really partner to the business, but someone who partner on the manufacturing side, who helped us with the whole process pretty much of design development and eventually production as well. And I'm curious, how did you, and we spent almost a year in product development as well, collecting feedback from different people. I'm curious, can you tell us a little bit more about how you approached collecting the feedback for your first prototypes and first editions of your product before you actually launched it?
Yeah, so we designed the product ourselves with so Shane Springer, our third partner, kind of came to us with the idea. You know, we were together drinking on a porch one time back at our college, and Shane Springer said, you know, hey, I know you guys are working on some products, and I have this idea that I really think would be useful for painters. And so he pitched it to us, and in a few months, you know, long story short, I got on the computer, got on my CAD software, came up with a few ideas for designs, pitched them to Springer and to Dave, and we talked about the positives and the negatives of some of the designs, and we eventually settled on one that we liked, that we thought solved the problem, and that we thought people would use. And we made a few 3D prints. I think we made, what, 20 3D prints of the prototype?
Yeah, we had about 5 or 6 variations, different spouts, different pop-off tabs, different fits. We had a lot of different designs at the beginning, and then we revised it into the best one.
Right. And so once we had those 3D printed, we started going around to paint stores. We literally just started, you know, in our hometown. We went to a Sherwin-Williams and we said, you know, hey, first of all, what do you guys think about this? You know, do you think that this would be something that your customers would use? And secondly, you know, do you have any painters that you work with or who come in very often that you think would be willing to test this for us and give us some feedback? And a lot of them were really helpful. They gave us business cards. We probably got close to 50 business cards going around to the different paint stores. And we just started calling painters, painters who, you know, would do houses and apartments in our area. And we got them on the phone and we said, hey, we've got this new product that we really think, you know, could be helpful to somebody who's, you know, doing the kind of work that you're doing. We will give it to you for free. You know, we'll let you try it for, you know, as long as you want, if you be willing to give us some feedback on it. And so we went through our list and it did take us a while. You know, painters are real busy. So it took us a little while to even find people who would be willing to use it for free. But we eventually did. We got all 20 out there and people started using it. And we made a survey sheet and, you know, criteria that we wanted to know. And we went back in a few weeks and we started talking to these painters and asking them questions. And they gave us the feedback. And we, you know, we just kind of kept going from there, building off of what they said and improving based on that.
I yep. really like this approach. Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead. No worries.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I really love this approach because it's instead of you going directly to the painters, you first went to the stores who already had the network of potential customers. I think that's quite an interesting approach because what I think what we were doing in our case was going directly to the consumers instead of going to shops. And probably that's something that we can still try to do and see feedback from actually people who are selling similar products. I'm just thinking out loud right now while we're having this conversation because it's a really, really nice approach. I think something that we can borrow from your industry into the apparel industry as well.
Yeah. So it seems like for the shirts that you guys produce, you know, it seems like anybody could wear that. I mean, anybody would be interested in that product. So you've got a huge market. Whereas for us, you know, it's more of a segmented market. You know, it's a lot of professional painters and definitely some DIYers. But, you know, for you guys, it seems like it'd be more difficult to find a list of, you know, the most interested people in your product. Would you say that's true?
Yeah, for sure. It's been that's kind of interesting thing talking about the audience, because while we were developing this product, we were documenting this whole process online and we were really blasting a lot of content like video, audio, blogs, Instagram, everything pretty much. If you scroll down to the first Instagram post of the first couple of months, it's really just us behind the scenes and pictures from the process, from our trips and everything. And this allowed us to create kind of a substantial audience that eventually when we launched last year in November and opened our store, those people were our first customers. And for us, at least, also a bootstrap business, that was a very, very good and successful launch. And what we saw eventually after that is that those people already had shirts and it was very challenging and serious to actually convince and find those new customers who don't really have this context of 6 or 12 months of development and actually building a business.
Right.
So it's really, really interesting challenge. And I want to ask you that. How did you approach your launch?
Well, yeah. So, let's see, we officially launched, you know, it's an interesting question because, you know, it wasn't really one moment, I don't think, where we said, okay, we are officially launched. I mean, we got the product made, over in China and, we got a big shipment sent here. And I guess the official launch would be when we launched our website and we got the product and we started taking orders. And then we started going around to paint stores in our area and, you know, showing them the final packaged product. And
what's actually interesting is that it's similar to you guys as far as you guys were not experts in clothing and apparel. And so we were not experts in the paint industry. Our one partner was.
Right.
So actually a lot of the time we spent before our quote unquote launch with the actual product, there was about 6 to 8 months there where me and Shane Smith went to all these paint stores and all these painters just to gather intel and to learn the market, to just kind of learn how does it work? You know, these are blue collar guys. They talk a certain way. They act a certain way. Their social you know, their social tendencies are a certain way. How do we learn all that? Because we needed to learn that before we launched. If we had the industry knowledge that our third partner had, we could have launched 8 months earlier, because the design process, Shane Smith is an expert designer with CAD, computer aided design, and he was able to design this in a month. So it took us a full year to kind of get the mass manufacturing going. And probably about 9 to 10 months of that was just us gathering intel before the official launch with our product. And I think that's similar to you guys. Did you guys have a similar experience to that, learning the market with the apparel business, not having that experience beforehand?
Yeah, pretty much. And I think it was during the development stage, we're like almost a year in business now, we know much more about who our customer is and what people are looking for in the product, how they're shopping online as well, especially for a product that's quite, I would say, you tricky to sell online, which is the dress shirt, which has so many variables and people have so many configurations and preferences for it. Oh, it's not like a standard t-shirt or a polo shirt. So it's been very, very interesting to see that and to also observe in person, in interpersonal meetings that we've had, because there's definitely, I think, especially for apparel still, the physical presence is probably the most important one you should have. And the digital channel is a nice to have, actually, unless, of course, you don't have like a very well-known partner as a personality or a brand that you can just collaborate with. And of course, they come with their audience and their platform. But if you have to build it yourself, I think, especially when it comes to apparel, and I'm also looking at my own habits as well, even though I'm very comfortable shopping online, still the mental model and process of going to fit, what about returns? And even though knowing that pretty much everything is free these days for the customer, it's still a lot of hassle and a blocker, I think. So I think in apparel, it's the experiential marketing part is very, very, very important. It's also something that we're starting to think about and to see how we can implement it within our own strategy. Definitely going and talking directly to people is very, very, and has been very, very productive for us as well.
Yeah, I remember hearing, I think you guys gave like a 5-minute update a little while back on your podcast. And I remember you saying, you know, that there's so much of a difference between, you know, telling somebody about the product and actually getting it in front of them so that they can physically touch it, you know, feel it and, you know, see it with their own eyes. It's a big difference.
It's a big difference.
Yeah. And, you know, we've definitely experienced that a lot. You know, we started out making calls to paint stores and, you know, trying to get a hold of decision makers who would, you know, be able to get the product on store shelves. And they would say, okay, well, you know, what's the product? And we would describe it to them. You know, we would say, okay, it's, you know, when you have, you know, debris or paint chips that naturally form in new or used paint cans, you know, you have to strain them out one way or another, or else they're going to end up on your walls and your walls are going to look messy and, you know, just not professional. And everybody got that. And everybody has seen the typical solution. You know, they've seen the bag strainers that most painters use. And, you know, a lot of the paint store owners that we talk to have experienced the problems that painters experience with those paint strainer bags, in that, you know, they're really messy. They waste paint and they're just really not convenient at all. So they realize that there are issues, and, you know, the solution to those issues is that painters, they won't even buy those bag strainers anymore. They'll resort to things like using, you know, their wives' stockings, or, you know, we've seen oil strainers or
do-rags,
t-shirts. You know, they really resort to these unusual methods to get the chunks out of their paint. So everybody understands the problem, you know, but the solution, our product, it's a little bit, you know, it seems like people don't get the light bulb until they actually physically, you know, hold it and see it in front of their eyes. But when that happens, we just get such a different result. And it's really wild.
How did you guys, to backtrack a bit, because I think it's an important point that many people get stuck on. How did you approach manufacturing the product?
Yeah, we actually have two startups that we're working on right now. And for the other startup, we used a designer from a company in a small company in Cleveland, and they have manufacturing in China. And basically we used him for one product. And then for this product, it's one piece of plastic. So he was able to make these small design changes we needed and make the tool for us very quickly for injection molding. We got tooling made for injection molding. So we just got that through contacts and from doing other startups. We built up kind of our process of how we do things just from other startups.
Yeah, and I think we got really lucky because we talked to a few different manufacturers before we settled on one.
Probably five or six.
Yeah, I think so. And the guy that we ended up going with, he's a rock star. He answers all our questions day or night. We've called him before and, you know, with questions, and it sounds like he's at a family barbecue, and, you know, he just will bend over backwards for us and answers our questions, walks us through things that we, you know, need to understand, because there is so much that goes into it. And he's helped us with things like shipping and customs and, you know, even, you know, taxes and the laws that go into, you know, all of this stuff. And it's really been an experience. We've learned a lot from it, but I really think we really just got a great guy on our team to work with us.
I think it's a really great example of how when you lack some sort of knowledge, you can just go and ask for help from somebody else and partner with this person or organization. And you don't have to really reinvent the wheel. We spend a lot of time hitting your head against the wall, trying to figure out things that people have already figured out.
Right.
Yeah. And actually, just, you know, because this is about the early days, I wanted to talk to you guys a little bit about some of our struggles early, now that you said hitting your head against the wall, because it's actually an interesting story that Shane and I, you know, have. And that is, we were in Dayton, kind of like we were talking about before, and we spent a couple years on these tech products. But there was, when that big change happened, I actually moved to Chicago first. And that was really tough because we had spent 2 years working on all these different startups, and we had really nothing to show for it,
right?
Other than a lot of documents taking up our hard drive space.
We learned a lot of ways to fail.
So that was actually really, really tough because we had worked so hard, like he said, 3-4 hours a night, every single day after work for 2 years, and we had nothing to show for it. And then I moved to Chicago. There was a time where it was very difficult for those, 6 to 8 months, something like that, where I was here, you were back in Ohio.
Right.
Geographically, it's about a 6-hour drive, just so you guys have an idea of how far that is. So that was really difficult because, as you guys have probably found, trying to do things on your own when you're going through a tough time, spending 2+ years and not getting anywhere, most people would have quit. But that's what makes an entrepreneur, is being persistent and having your vision and executing on that vision, no matter how long it takes. I mean, and I know that I've talked to him about this same thing, and it's, no matter what happens, if we go bankrupt tomorrow, if I, you know, lose my house, lose my car, I'm going to keep doing it. It doesn't matter, you know, and that's the kind of mindset I feel like you need to have if you're going to be a successful entrepreneur.
I agree 100% with that.
To follow up on that point, what would you say keep you going? Like, what's the long-term vision or some other reasons?
Man, really just the love for it. We love what we do. We have fun with it. You know, we definitely enjoy creating things and solving problems. I think as mechanical engineers, that's kind of built into us, you know, problem solving and building. So that's definitely something that we, just really enjoy doing. But aside from that, you know, I think we've kind of fallen in love with the business side of things. We didn't know a whole lot about, you know, sales and marketing and, you know, the legal aspects of building the business right off the bat. You know, we would start off and we'd build this product that we would think would be really cool. You know, we build a robot and say, man, I bet you people are going to love this. And, you know, we didn't know how to show it to people. We didn't know how to get out there and get feedback. And that was something that we had to learn. And it was definitely uncomfortable at first, reaching out there and putting ourselves out there and, you know, saying, hey, what do you think about this? Knowing that somebody could say, well, it's not very good. We don't like it. But as we've kind of moved forward and we've learned about, you know, all these different things other than creating and building and engineering, I think the business side is something that we've learned to enjoy just as much as actually building a product. And that's something that we definitely want to move forward with. And, you know, eventually we would like to share what we've learned with other entrepreneurs.
Well, we're already kind of doing that.
Oh yeah, I guess we kind of are.
You know, I think big term vision that Shane and I have been discussing is business and engineering consulting. And by that, I mean, it's kind of rare for somebody to start a project from conception, design it internally. We write our own patents. We build our own website. We design everything ourselves, market everything ourselves. And now we produced it ourselves, selling it ourselves. It's kind of rare that you see somebody work on something from the very, very start to the very, very finish with minimal, you know, I mean, of course we have a lawyer that helps us out with stuff. We have this guy, designer that helps us out with stuff, but we've played a major role in every single process along the way. And that has taught us a lot. And we've had a lot of family, friends, other people that have noticed this because we've done it with a lot of products. And this was the first one that has been successful. We got plenty more coming down the pipeline. And family and friends have noticed that. And we've had a lot of people come to us and ask us, hey, like, I have this idea. How do I move forward? What are the steps to move forward? And there's a lot of things: being protected for your intellectual property, budgeting, knowing when to move forward with certain design changes or when to talk to people about things. And I really think that business and engineering consulting in the future, maybe 5 to 10 years down the road, once we have a couple successful businesses, that could be a big, not only moneymaker, but a big way to help people in the community that we're in.
Right.
Oh, no, absolutely. Especially when you think about all the skills that you're acquiring, I think. You should definitely do more podcasting, being guests, or start your own podcast as well, I think, because even though a lot of those things that both we and you guys have been through, I think, are written in books, pretty much, it's still, you know, it's always new listeners, new people who are exposed to that. And it's very, very important to spread out the message and the lessons learned from entrepreneurship. It's very useful for other people who are doing that. You two have a really nice relationship, I think, and I would really love to touch a little bit on that relationship between co-founders, because I want to hear from both of you. I'm curious, why do you think it's better to work with a co-founder?
I think it's critical, because there are so many times where, you know, you go through ups and downs, and there are a lot of times where, you know, we'll run into issues or problems, and I will get to a point where I say, I don't know how we're going to overcome this problem. I don't know how we're going to get past this. And I'll get really down on it. You know, and it's really easy to let yourself get caught up in feeling down and low. And it seems like every time I'm down, you know, Dave is up, you know, and he says, man, we're going to do this. We're going to do this. We're going to do this. And we're going to get past this, and vice versa. You know, when Dave runs into issues with, you know, the operations side that he works on, you know, I am there to, you know, make him see the bigger picture. And I just think that is really, really important, you know, to have somebody there so that, you know, you don't fall into a slump and just continue with it. You've got somebody constantly pushing you, somebody who's constantly depending on you to be there and to do your work. Because, you know, if I feel like taking, you know, a few days off and maybe being lazy, you know, I feel guilty about that because I got a team that's dependent on me. And, I think that's really important.
And what about you, David? Do you have some comments on that?
Yeah. So actually, going back to what you guys said about podcasts and talking with people. So I think a common feeling that entrepreneurs have is that you see other people's successes, and it's easy to say you only see the top 5% of the surface. So it's easy to say, oh, they just became successful so quickly, and I am struggling, and I am the only one that's struggling, which that's not true. Everybody struggles as an entrepreneur. And I think, you know, it's easy to fall into a trap where you think you're the only one struggling. And it's great to have a teammate and other people that you can rely on, because you don't feel like you're the only one struggling. And it's great to get out there and listen to podcasts and talk with people. That's why I love what you guys did with this Early Days podcast.
Absolutely.
Because you're not the only one that's struggling. And there's a, and what's actually fantastic is that, you know, if you look at the news and all this other stuff, it's all this bad stuff happening in the world, all these bad people. But you kind of come to find out when you're an entrepreneur that a lot of people want to help you, especially if you work hard. That's and true. You are ambitious. And, you know, everybody wants to pass the torch on to somebody younger than them that's hungry, that wants to get the job done. But you got to ask to receive. You got to put in the work. You got to talk to people. You have to be outgoing and get out of your comfort zone. Nothing's just going to come to you. And I think that's a common, you know, mistake, is that people think I'm the only one struggling. Luck is not coming my way. Nothing's coming to me. And nothing's going to come to you if you don't get out there and you don't listen to podcasts like this and realize that, hey, I'm not the only one struggling.
Yeah.
And having a team helps you get through that much quicker.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I completely agree with that as well. And I think that by like what we are going through and what you guys are going through, I think we kind of have a responsibility of documenting and sharing, you know, the time that it takes to actually be, you know, somewhat successful, at least. I know you guys are working also on the side as we are. And at least success in my mind is, you know, being able to work on my own thing full time. And but there's a long road that it takes from, you know, from scratch until you reach that point. And I think documenting that and sharing that with people, I think sets some realistic expectations. So people, once they start, they don't give up that quickly, because then they know that there'll be, you know, there'll be some hard parts the first few years, but then that's okay until, you know, to reach the next stage. But it's not that quick, as, you know, as the media seems, as the media covers it and all this, you know, success stories. So I think that's, it's a tricky thing that we need to talk about more, I think.
Yeah. I totally agree. It doesn't happen like it does in the movies. You know, in the movies, you only see the highlights, and there are a lot of things that you go through behind the scenes where, you know, I think something like 85% of businesses, you know, fail before they launch, or, you know, they give up when they hit a hard time. And yeah, it's easy to see why when you run into problems like, you know, we've experienced, and I'm sure you've experienced too. And, you know, seeing that we aren't the only ones, like Dave said, it's very important.
How are you guys thinking about the financial aspect of it? You mentioned that you're also working on the side. Are you bootstrapping the whole thing, right?
Yeah, we're completely broke.
As we are. but I think that, because I was talking about with someone the last few days, that it there's a lot of benefits of working within those constraints. I think you touched on previously that, you know, by making a consultancy or something like that, you'll be able to actually explain the whole process from A to Z. And that comes from working within constraints and having financial constraints and time constraints.
Yeah, I mean, actually, an important point that you just made is we are completely self-funding this. So it forces us to learn things such as building our own websites, marketing. And secondly, it forces us to be extremely efficient, because we need to be efficient with our time and our money. So finding that line, that optimal line of quality versus cost versus time, that's something that we have been getting really good at. I feel like we're pretty darn good at that. Because we've been able to start this whole business for not much more than what, about 12 grand.
Yeah. That's, we have, you know, so we have gotten some assistance from, the Dayton Entrepreneur Society,
They've been fantastic.
Yeah, we did find some help there. They have helped us pay for some legal costs. So I don't want to completely discount, you know, some of the financial help that we've got.
Of course not.
But, you know, it really is important to understand, you know, where to apply that. And, you know, if you only have a certain amount of money that you can spend and you've got all these things that you need to do, you really have to be careful and figure out how to distribute that and make it work for you and go the farthest.
Well, also the most important resource is time. And we have extremely limited time working 50-hour-a-week jobs and trying to do this 3-4 hours a night. That's another thing, is how do we be efficient with our time? Every single day, we don't have enough time to do everything. So we need to write down what our tasks are and prioritize, because we'll be working till midnight every night. And you have to be able to be consistent. And if we're working till midnight, we're going to get burned out so quick. So yeah, that was a balance too, is I remember when we first kind of started, we would burn ourselves out. We would work for 2 weeks. We would work till 10 or 11 at night for 2 weeks. And then we'd take 2 weeks off.
Right.
And we'd realize, we're like, oh my gosh, we're getting so much done in such a short period of time. But then we're burned out, because we just, like I said before, we just wanted to be like to the top kingpins right away. And so we thought, let's just put in all this time and it's going to work out. But you actually need a balance of your mental health, your physical health, and your spiritual health. You actually need a balance. And, you know, when during those 2 weeks that we're working our butts off, we weren't working out. We weren't, you know, taking time to meditate and relax. We weren't doing the normal things that we did that allowed our bodies to recover, because there is some rest needed. Not much, not too much as an entrepreneur. I mean, you gotta, you know, be smart, but that was something that we had to learn. So,
yeah, I think it's a very important lesson, especially when it comes to mental health and to the balance that you need to have. I think in the very beginning, at least on my side, I remember when we just started, I remember like editing vlogs up until 1, 2 a.m. and then waking up early in the morning, like at 5 the next day to continue that. And that's just not sustainable, I think, especially if you want to push this over a long-term period.
Right. Yeah, that's, man, you'll burn out real quick doing
that. Yeah, 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 absolutely, absolutely. And I think we became much better with optimizing our time, but a lot of it is related to patience as well. I think in the beginning, most young entrepreneurs, us included, really underestimate patience and how long things will take or usually take, because we're always, all the stories that we're reading or we're exposed to is those successes, but nobody tells you about the 20 years before this success, like the 10-year overnight success.
Right.
I'm curious, what do you think about patience, and have you struggled with that at some point?
Oh, absolutely. In a number of ways. You know, right off the bat, I can think of, you know, the thing that would bug us is that we would be able to control one aspect of the project, and then we would hand it off to either a company or a person who we would have to wait on. You know, for example, when we were getting our 3D prints made, you know, we would design the 3D print as fast as we could, and we would be doing hard work, and we'd just be, you know, putting the metal to the pedal to the metal. And then we would take that file and we'd send it off to a 3D print manufacturer, and it would take 2 weeks to get back to us.
Every design change.
Right. Every time we changed the design, 2 weeks of us, you know, sitting there doing nothing, waiting on somebody else to get back to us.
And sometimes they came back where there was a small issue and we had to get them reprinted. So that's a whole month.
Right.
It's a whole month.
Right. And it was so frustrating, because we just wanted to be go, 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 go. And it's hard when you have to, you know, you have to, I mean, on one hand, you feel like you're forced to sit there and wait and depend on other people. But on the other hand, I think it also forces you to say, okay, we're not going to take this time off. We're going to be productive. How can we be productive in this time? And that is one thing that we've learned, is that, you know, there's something that you can be doing to better your business at all times. And you just have to put in the time, you know, to figure out what it is. And I think that, you know, patience and waiting on other things to happen has really taught us how to do that.
I think it's a great way to also kind of wrap up this conversation. I think we can just do a part two, like a few months in as well, because I think we are on a very similar path as well. I see a lot of similarities when I compare, when I listen to your journey now and to what we've been through over the past couple of years. It was really, really nice talking to you guys. How can people connect with you?
So we have a Facebook website and an Instagram, so they can do c2pstrain.com. So that's Charlie, the number two, P as in Paul, strain.com. And you can contact us on there pretty easily. And then on Facebook, if you search C2P Strain, you can contact us on there as well. And the product, we do have two products for sale right now, if you guys get on our website. So we're excited. When are you guys thinking this is going to air?
Next week.
Awesome.
Actually, yeah, we're going to produce it or post-produce it quickly, and it will be out on next Thursday, and I'm going to share with you as well the links to where it goes, because we use Anchor to broadcast this, so it goes to all the major platforms. So whatever you're listening to on iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Overcast, whatever, it's there, and people will be able to hear your story, which I think is really, really interesting. Any parting words?
Yeah, I just, you know, I really appreciate the opportunity to talk to you guys. And I agree. I think that we are both on a very similar path. And I think that's one of the things that drew me to you guys initially, is that we have a lot of similarities. So I would love to keep up with you guys in, you know, even if it's just for a chat here and there. But this has been really awesome. And yeah, we're looking forward to staying in touch.
Thank you so much for listening to the show. If you enjoyed it and found it valuable, we would really appreciate your support by liking, rating, subscribing to the Early Days podcast. This program is produced and hosted by Dulo, that's me and Julian. And as we mentioned in the very beginning, we make non-iron dress sheets from performance fabrics. If you want to learn more, head over to weardulo.com, that's weardulo.com, and take a look at our products, our story, and the journey of how we're building the business. Until next time, bye-bye.